You are listening to Colt Gennaro Chat, the premier English language podcast on Atletico Madrid and a part of Into the Calderon, SB Nation's home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron. My guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat is Robert Walker. Robert Walker is the guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat. Rob is here to talk Copa del Rey quarterfinals, including, but not limited to, Atletico's win over Eibar on Thursday, which saw Los Rojiblancos zero in on the semifinals. Rob is also joining me to talk about money, revenue, and a report in The Independent this week detailing how a stadium called Wanda may negatively impact Atleti. Let's go. Well, Rob, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am just fantastic. Rainy day here in Phoenix, Arizona. Been really nasty outside all day. I've literally been like in my room in my house.
Yeah, it's been quite nasty here too.
Yeah, just playing on my PS4, watching some. And finishing up yesterday's game. Not much of a better way to spend a lazy Friday at home.
Exactly. Always good to catch up on the football.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of the football, there is a bit of it to discuss on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat. We'll leave the Copa del Rey whip around for a little later in the show. We'll dive right into Atletico, their 3-0 win over Eibar yesterday. Pretty impressive performance, all told. Rob, generally speaking, would you agree?
Absolutely. It's always good to win 3-0, and especially encouraging to be scoring on set pieces again. One from a free kick and one from a corner, so that's very good.
Yeah, two goals on set pieces, that's pretty amazing. You don't do that very often anymore. It took 9 months between set piece goals. Because Saul scored against Eibar at the Calderon last February, and then we went 9 months without scoring one, and then Godin popped up against Osasuna in November. And now we've got 2-1 game. We're making progress. Exactly.
Yes, and just a few years ago, Godin was popping up all over the time for corner headers, so it's good to get back into that groove.
Yeah, this time we had Griezmann and Gamero score, the French connection. Both netting goals, offset pieces. Let's take this from the top. I want to talk about Eibar's formation, actually. It was pretty interesting. Mendilibar did not start with a natural striker. He had Bebe playing essentially as a striker, even though he's by trade a left winger.
Yes, and he made a storming run early on in the game that sort of made you think he was going to be fairly dangerous, but it didn't end up totally being that way. But still, he's a very physical player that can go very quickly and a threat, you would say, but not a natural striker, as you say.
Yeah, he had a couple nice runs early, had a free kick towards the end of the first half that was in a pretty dangerous position just outside the box, but unfortunately hooked it. Well over the bar. Juan Fran eventually took control of that battle and won it as the game moved along. And this game started with silence as the Frente Atletico, the ultras in the south stand, staged a protest of silence against the new badge, which has been a source of controversy ever since it was announced last month. Silence of exactly 19 minutes and 3 seconds, harkening back to the year in which Atletico were founded.
Yes, there's a very upset about the whole badge change. There weren't too many people in the Calderon for the game. I don't know what the exact attendance numbers were, but it wasn't extraordinarily well attended.
No, it wasn't. The kickoff time was weird because most shops in Spain don't close until the kickoff was what, like 7 o'clock at night. Most shops in Spain don't close for another hour after that. So it was pretty sparsely attended, and then you have the ultras being silent for the first 19 minutes. So it was kind of weird as I settled in to watch this, kind of a really quiet atmosphere. Atleti tend to prosper when there's a lot of noise going on around in the Calderon. Simeone loves to egg on the crowd, and there was really none of that early on. It was pretty eerie.
Yeah, cup games are always weird when it comes to atmosphere, sparsely attended, and you know, weird times of day, and not often extraordinary matches.
Yeah, the planning for that just needs to get better. I mean, we talked about this before, how usually the quarterfinals, semifinals, usually you start getting better attendance, usually start getting more vibrant atmospheres like you'll see in a league game or a European game. It wasn't really the case for a good portion of this one. Then the Frente started singing, and Atleti really started to take over. It was a very attacking Atleti in this one. Rob, were you surprised to see both Carrasco and Gaitán in the 11?
Not particularly. I was quite happy to see them both in the 11. I think we've been sort of looking forward to seeing that more this season, and it kind of makes sense. Gaitán's been on good form, and Carrasco's coming back from injury, so it made sense to me for both of them to start this game.
I think Atleti's most attacking midfield is Carrasco and Gaitán on either wing. Koke and Saúl in the middle, that's exactly what Cholo played. I was a bit surprised to see it. He went all out in attack. No Gabby started on the bench. Gabby, most defensive central midfielder, really, in the team, with Thiago out. And he started him on the bench, and Gabby didn't come on for more than an hour. So it was pretty great to see. And that's the first time that midfield has been trotted out since the Granada win back in October.
So yeah, and I thought it functioned quite well.
Slowly but surely, we may be seeing Simeone regaining trust in that more attacking setup. Definitely something to look out for. It started as a 4-3-3, I thought, because you saw Carrasco playing up as a forward. Eventually, Carrasco was given really one of his most free roles since he's joined Atleti. He would appear on the left, he would appear on the right-hand side, he even played through the middle a little bit in the first half. That's like the freest role he's ever been given.
Yeah, and sort of given the nature of that front four, as you'd call them, of Gaitán, Correa, Carrasco, and Griezmann, all four of those guys can sort of switch around into the various forward positions. So it's a fun thing to watch, that fluid attack.
Yeah, it was definitely very fluid. Didn't generate many shots, didn't generate many opportunities, but Atleti had possession, played some really, really neat stuff at times. Eventually culminated in a disallowed goal for Stefan Savage. Would have been his first as a member of Atleti, and Simeone was pissed when this goal was disallowed. It was a very late whistle. Flag went up very, very late after the players started wheeling away in celebration. Would have been great to see Savage score, but it was the correct call. He was a step offside. That said, Cholo was not at all pleased. But just 2 minutes later, Atleti would score an onside goal, and it was from a pretty similar situation. A Koke free kick from pretty close to the center circle got a lot under it. Very powerful kick. Landed on Jose Jimenez's head. He flicked, really intelligent flick on to Griezmann, who had an empty net as Yoel came out. Not a really smart decision for Yoel to come out there, was it?
Yeah, he completely whiffed on that one. It was a really deep free kick, so it must have been very hard for him to read where it was going to go. But still, Jose Ma did a great job to get his head on it and got it straight to Griezmann, who, honestly, he wasn't going to miss from there. So
you can't really miss from there. The net was gaping. It was his 14th headed goal, which is the second most headed goals an Atleti player has scored under Simeone. And You wouldn't expect Griezmann to have that many headed goals, but it just shows how complete a forward he has become under Cholo's tutelage, how many different ways he can score when he's in the mood, as he was on Thursday. He played really well.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect someone that slight of build to get so many headers, but he certainly does. So
yeah, does not fit the profile, but there you go. Stats don't lie.
He's not a traditional target man.
Yeah. Eibar's formation. I mentioned a little earlier how Bebe was kind of the striker in this formation. It looked a little bit like 4-6-0 early on before. They kind of settled into a 4-1-4-1. again, the lack of a natural forward, I think, kind of hurt them as Sergi Henrique started on the bench, didn't come on until after the hour. I think that kind of hurt them. Defensively, they looked solid. Let Atleti have a lot of the ball. Not very many dangerous opportunities, but they did nothing going forward. And Takashi Inui, who was so dangerous at Ipurua on January 7th, was kind of missing in the first half here.
Yeah, and that sort of supports Cholo's decision to play the Koke Saul midfield, go more attacking in this game. They were going to be strong defensively, especially away from home. So it was the right decision for sure.
Yeah, and that attacking midfield was buoyed by Savage and Jimenez, who were both very, very strong at the back. And they both were great, pretty much faultless, I thought. Nico Gaitán, is he the winter signing? Thought he was fantastic in this first half in particular.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about him. He's sort of been a conundrum the first half of the season, hadn't really got going, but I think we're starting to see him get used to playing in this Atleti side, in this system, and he's starting to come good, which is a great sign.
Really liked his work rate, really liked his ability to draw contact, draw fouls. Really tricky player, good pace, linked up really well with Felipe on the left-hand side. As he took turns with Carrasco, I sent a tweet out from the Anthony Calderon account. I think I could link up with Felipe. And I suck at Felipe.
Yeah, Felipe's great. I mean, he's such a solid player.
So damn good. And he just links up well with anyone. Gaitán and Carrasco were both the beneficiaries of his services. But yeah, is this real for Gaitán? Do you think this is finally where he turns the corner and becomes an essential part of Atleti's season moving forward?
I'm starting to believe it, actually. Early on, he would just look very kind of lost in the team, but it kind of makes sense for this time of year for him to start getting himself going, and he's settled into the team by now. So it's good to see him going. He is absolutely rapid. Watching him run is pretty amazing, so very fun.
Yep, and he seems to have found his groove in terms of his work rate, which is going to endear him to Cholo. If you don't work in this team, you don't play. And Gaitán learned that early on in the season and throughout the first few months. But the common reference point is Griezmann. The amount of time it took Antoine to acclimate to the team, to acclimate to Cholo's demands. He scored that hat trick in Bilbao in December 2014 and just never looked back. And it was around that time where Gaitán started to feature a bit more in the team. He scored the winner against Betis last weekend and didn't score against Eibar, but played really well. It was very, very dangerous. And overall, in the first half, Atleti were good despite the one shot on target. Atleti had a lot of the ball, about 55% possession, I want to say. It just looked very dangerous despite not really winning in many shots and their goal coming off a free kick.
Yeah, it's certainly set up an interesting second half. You wondered if they were going to stick with that 1-0 advantage and just hang on, but they pushed on for more in the second half, which is good to see.
That would have been a terrible decision to just hold on to the 1-0.
Yeah.
To Atleti's credit, they kept pushing, they kept pounding away in the second half, culminating in the second and third goals. The second goal from Correa, who didn't really do a whole lot other than this goal. I can't remember who delivered the pass, but this was a rampaging run by Carrasco down the left wing. He was finally stopped in front of goal by Alex Galvez and Yoel and a couple other guys. The ball bounced into Correa's path, and he just very easily slotted home as Yoel was, again, just out of position.
Yeah, it was a good goal. I believe it was Felipe that played him forward, and Carrasco, as you say, stormed into the box and got into the 6-yard area, and then it just sort of pinballed around for a bit, and Correa was there to poach it. So that's what you want to see. You score the most goals from those kind of areas statistically. So that's what you want to see from a striker.
Like, it was a brilliant ball. Like, my gosh, it could not have been more perfectly placed. And Carrasco, with his burst of speed, looked like his old self. Didn't look like the Achilles was bothering him very much. He really did a lot of the work with his goal.
Yeah, that was sort of his own little personal fitness test there, a big long sprint into the box, so he looked fine, so that was great.
And then Kevin Gamero came on, just after Correa scored, which made me think it was a planned sub. The cameras panned to Gamero taking off his trainer and getting ready to come into the game right before Correa scored. So it made me think it was more of a planned substitute, give Correa an hour, then throw Gamero on for the final half hour if he was needed. He wasn't exactly needed in this case, but he scored anyway. About 5 minutes later, 5-7 minutes later, off a Koke corner, pinballed around again. It was an outswung corner to Jimenez at the far post, pinballed to Griezmann at the near post, then back to the far post for Gamero to finish off with a really good header, 3-0.
Yeah, it was some really good head tennis on that one. Again, Jose Ma involved on this one. Just started off, got it to the back post where Griezmann was, who then did it again across the face of goal, and Gamero was right there. So, again, a good little set-piece routine, if it was a routine. And it worked very well.
It did indeed. Gamero's first goal of this year's Copa del Rey. Of course, he helped Sevilla get to the final in last year's Copa del Rey. Maybe there is more to come from him. In general, just ruthless efficiency. Atleti scored on all three of his shots. And this is really when they're at their best, is when they're this ruthlessly efficient. They had a lot of the ball. They looked good. Really were not in any danger, which made me kind of question why Diego Godin had to come on with 15 minutes to go. That was an interesting one. I didn't really agree with that. What did you think of it?
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, I don't know who else you would have really brought on, maybe Sime Vrsaljko, but I don't know. It was weird. I mean, they were in no danger of conceding, and I sort of thought once he brought on Gabby, that would have solidified the team enough.
Yeah, because Gabby came on for Carrasco 5 minutes after the hour, so just before Gamero's goal. But yeah, maybe you want to give Godin a run out. Don't want to give him an entire game off before you have to travel to San Mamés this weekend for a pretty big contest. But I didn't really see the point of it. I didn't think it was too necessary. It did give us a chance to see Jose Ma at defensive midfielder again. He looked fine. So maybe giving Eibar something to think about for the second leg, or previewing the second leg, when I expect Cholo will rotate quite a bit. At least he should.
Three more of that. Yeah. Yeah, I would expect the same.
What else from this one? Yeah, Correa's goal was the 500th goal of the Simeone era. That's 500 goals in just over 5 years. So congrats, Angel, you're a part of Atleti history.
Yeah, it was the biggest win of this quarterfinal Copa del Rey fixtures, which is really, really good to see.
Yeah, it was. Lots of offside in this game. I think Atleti straight offside 7 times. What did you make of that? Just overexcitement?
Yeah, overexcitement. Yeah, 7 times, and Eibar were offside 0 times. So, I mean, I guess it's good because it means that you have players that are eager to get in behind, but you have to keep your discipline in those sorts of situations. But not too worrying.
Yeah, it didn't hurt. This certainly did not hurt this game.
It may tell more about Ibar's defensive setup than it does really much about Atleti, that they're holding a high line and trying to pull an offside trap on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, that was really about it, other than one kind of funny note. This was about 7 minutes left, and the game was getting not much going on. It was kind of droll. So I was watching the BN Sports English feed, and the English commentator pronounced Saul's name a couple times, just to kind of see if his pronunciation was right, just to kind of keep himself awake, I think, because there really was not much going on. This was about the 83rd minute, and like Saul went to ground and he said, Saul. So that was funny.
Oh, that's great. The English speakers are kind of confused by his name. Is it Saul? Is it Saul? Those accents, they'll do it to you.
It's the damn accent, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So that's from this one. Atleti pretty easily win 3-0 and take a pretty sizable advantage to Ibarra next week. That second leg is on Wednesday and should be just a formality, as Atleti are set to appear in the Copa del Rey semifinals for the first time in 3 years. And that would make it a pretty successful Copa run, whether or not they get to the final. After a couple disappointing quarterfinal eliminations, getting back to the semifinals is is pretty good. I'll hopefully take it one step further and get to the final, but that's nothing too far ahead.
That's right. And Atleti, I mean, probably had the best draw of the big three teams. Celta and Real Sociedad are both very good teams, so tough for the other two. But, hey, they got the job done.
Let's talk about those other teams now.
yes, let's.
On Wednesday, Alcorcón and Alaves. This one had a pretty interesting ending. It was goalless until Ibai Gomez came on, and about 5 minutes after he came on, the game ended, and it ended 2-0 to Alaves. A very late brace from Ibai Gomez to pretty much send Alaves through to the Copa del Rey semifinals for the fourth time in club history.
Yeah, and I believe Alcorcón had a man sent off as well in the 90-something minute. So
I think after Gomez scored his second, things got a little testy. Fans got pretty pissed, and then someone got sent off. But yes, a red card was indeed handed out. And that's about all she wrote for Alcorcón. Still a great run for them, but they now have to go to Alaves, and they're behind 2-0 with both goals, away goals.
Yeah, they've had their one big upset in recent years. They got Manuel Pellegrini fired, so you know.
Yeah, they did. The other quarterfinal first leg on Wednesday, Real Madrid and Celta Vigo from the Bernabeu. This was tasty, wasn't it? Real Madrid 1, Celta Vigo 2. Iago Aspas, fantastic. He's just in the middle of a fantastic season that really no one is talking about. Opened the scoring before Marcelo instantly brought Madrid back, and then I think it was Johnny, right? Johnny scored immediately after 57 seconds.
I turned this game on at the exact right time. I saw on Twitter that Iago Aspas scored, and I turned it on immediately to see Marcelo score and then see Johnny score immediately. I mean, they cut straight between Ramos and Varane, and
it was insane.
Yeah, it was
wide open.
I mean, I think they were still celebrating the goal, honestly. So, you know, and it was a great finish as well from Johnny.
Yeah, and Celta hanging on to spring the upset. And they take a pretty fantastic result to Balaidos next week, and they will try to finish off Real Madrid. They'll have a 2-1 aggregate lead with two away goals, so Madrid need to win 2-0 or better to get to the semifinals.
So that's two Cristiano Ronaldo penalties nailed on in the second leg, I'd say.
There you go.
Always happy to provide.
Thank you so much. On Thursday, in Atleti's game, we had Real Sociedad and Barcelona from Anoeta. You may recall that Anoeta is Barcelona's house of horrors. Barca had not won there since May of 2007, and notice how I said had instead of have. A Neymar penalty, sealing a 1-0 win for Barca, and they now take a 1-0 result from the first leg to Camp Nou next week, where they will pretty much do it. So Atleti, the only home side to win the first leg of the quarterfinals.
Yes, and a big win as well. They certainly look the most comfortable of all the teams going into the second leg. Barcelona are in the lead, but still, Real Sociedad could cause them some problems.
Yeah, they could. I would expect a pretty intense second leg, but Barcelona are probably going to go through unless they have that away goal. They can't even score from open play at Anoeta, but they still won.
Yeah, that one wasn't a too interesting game.
No, it wasn't. Some questionable refereeing, some Sociedad players taking to Twitter to express their disapproval of certain calls in this game, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yes, indeed. No PK shouting at the president of the league this time.
Yeah, unlike last time. Although I would expect some more hostility to come there.
No, certainly.
Alright, what else we got? Anything else?
I think that's it in terms of the Copa. I think we hit everything.
Alright, dope. After this, we will move on to a stadium called Wanda and a whole lot more. Stick with us. Before we continue, I'd like to let our listeners know that this edition of Colchonero Chat is being recorded with Zencaster. making podcasts is a ton of fun, but it's not always fun. You know, sometimes you get a Skype call that drops, you have to call back repeatedly. The sound quality just is robotic, it sounds poor, and you have to remove a lot of this in editing and post-production. It's tough. Zencastr is trying to change all that. There's no need for Skype or any third-party service like it. You record directly from their website. Another kicker is Zencastr offers studio-quality sound no matter where you are. For example, I'm in Arizona on the west coast of the United States. Rob's in Ohio. But thanks to this studio-quality sound that Zencastr offers, you wouldn't have known that unless I had told you. So to learn more about them, you can go to Zencastr.com. That's Zencastr.com. Alternatively, you could have looked at our Twitter bios to find out where we were.
Yeah, that would have worked.
It'd be better if you don't.
Don't stalk us, please.
Yeah. Okay, on to this report in The Independent earlier this week from the great Dermot Corrigan. An independent investigation the deck headline reads, unearthed searching questions about the financing of Atletico's new stadium. Rob, you read this. What were your initial thoughts? Or what are your initial thoughts?
Well, I mean, I suppose the main thing is stadium moves are never drama-free. And in this case, it seems like there's even a lot more going on. There was a mentioned debt to Carlos Slim, who was at one time, if he still isn't, the richest man in the world. And then the Chinese ownership as well being involved. So it seems a little shady. I don't know how much of it is complete fact, but it's worrying.
It is worrying, and I think most of it is shady, despite Atleti's insistence that, hey, everything's above board, everything's fine. If you have not read this article, it's on The Independent, and it's really, really good stuff. It's pretty essential reading if you want to understand what the hell is going on with the stadium called Wanda. Atleti have been talking about moving from the Calderon for many, many years. They are finally set to do it, but they could not have done it without investment from Carlos Slim, the Mexican businessman who is one of the richest men on the planet, as well as the Wanda Group, who have a 20% stake in Atleti. Slim is reportedly owed 160 million euros following his investment into the Wanda project to get it done. There are concerns that Atleti will not be able to pay that back, even after selling the Calderon site, after demolishing the Calderon and then selling the site. There are concerns that Atleti may need to sell stars to pay back Carlos Slim, and that is very concerning.
Yes, and it isn't going to make anything better for the fans, who there was some drama involving them as well regarding some town hall meetings. And I think it's the Socialist Party in Madrid that are upset about fan access to the stadium. So a lot of things going wrong.
Yeah, there really is no fan access to the stadium. There are no metro bus stops anywhere really right anywhere near the front of the stadium. There's not really any parking to speak of. It's in its own little corner in suburban Madrid. It's really actually in Real Madrid territory. Where this is, it's not really close to the Calderon, and you're talking about demolishing the Calderon to move there, selling the site, and attempting to pay back some that way. There have been problems with what's going to replace the Calderon, and there's also been, as Rob alluded to, this political infighting, as the article terms it. No one can really decide what's gonna be done with the site, and there have just been a bunch of roadblocks put in the way of this move.
Yes, and I mean, it's going to be weird in terms of the atmosphere of the stadium, but that's small peanuts compared to the big deal regarding the money and having to sell stars to pay for it. I mean, we've seen this with lots of clubs over the years struggling with stadium moves.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Socialist Party had a bit of a problem with this. The Socialist City Councilor, Mercedes Gonzalez, joked that helicopters would be needed to bring 70,000 fans to the new ground for games. That's how kind of dire this situation is with regards to public transportation, with regards to making parking for this huge supposedly state-of-the-art modern stadium. There's still a ton of issues here. Atleti
not least knowing if it's even going to open on time.
Yeah, Atleti maintain it's going to be fine, but the report says Atleti have already asked La Liga about playing at an alternate ground while the stadium is finished. So publicly, Atleti, everything's fine, but privately, there are some concerns that yeah, this is going to take a little longer than anticipated.
Yes, and I don't know where they would play, maybe Rayo Vallecano or something, but you know.
It doesn't seem that they want to play at the Calderon. They want to get rid of the Calderon.
Yeah. Wow.
One of the main person that Corrigan interviewed for this story. Hold on, let me find his name. Hold, please. Yeah, his Jose Luis Sanchez, a leading figure of the fans group as Señales de Humo, he believes that during the summer, Atleti will come in during the night and they will hire people to tear the stadium apart at night where no one can see it. Or they'll have a bunch of events over the summer to kind of give the stadium a nice send-off, tear the pitch up, and it'll never be replaced. It seems like they are trying to do everything they can to not play at the Calderon next year because they have put on such a brave PR face that maintains that we don't need the Calderon. We're going to have the Wanda Metropolitano and everything's going to be peachy.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, regardless of if they can pay for it or not, who knows if it'll be built on time. And I would assume that given how stadium moves in the past, particularly West Ham this past summer, they sort of, for lack of a better word, pimped out their old stadium for friendlies and such to squeeze some money out of it. So I expect the same thing, really.
Yeah, sometimes stadium moves are wildly successful. Like you have Juventus' move to the J Stadium. You have Bayern's move to Allianz Arena. Then you have West Ham's move. And it looks like Atletico is going to fit into the latter category. Because
yeah,
we had the fans complaining about the badge. We haven't had as many complaining about the stadium. There seems to be more of a placid acceptance, a tacit acceptance of the stadium move. But if it's going to result in, if it results in Atleti tearing apart the core of its team, this team that's won La Liga, made two Champions League finals, averaged a trophy a year under Simeone, then it should really piss some people off. It hasn't yet. Maybe it will.
Yeah, I expect as more concrete news comes out, the more people are going to be upset about it.
And this is interesting because yesterday we saw the Football Money League report that said Atleti were 13th in revenue last year.
Yeah, and
to the top of revenue earned.
Yep, and looking at it, it looks like their 2016 revenue is somewhere in the 200 million euro mark, which is a lot.
230 million euros. They're 20 for 2016. The 2015 revenue was about 177 million. So you're talking about a 50 million euro increase in revenue, and this shows that Atleti are probably the first team to really significantly feel the impact of the new TV deal in Spain. So that is unequivocally, categorically, a good thing.
Most certainly. And it looks like a 53 million increase in broadcast revenue for a solid number on it.
Yeah, that's huge. And we talk about the exposure I'd like to have gotten from making Champions League finals, going deep in that competition, perennially appearing in the Champions League now. This is their fourth straight year in it. They're aiming to make it five in a row later this year with where was I going? Never mind. Basically, my point is that, yeah, everything seems to be ticking upward in terms of revenue, but then you learn that Atleti still have a ton of debt, that it's not all paid off yet, that you owe Carlos Slim overseas a bunch of money, and you start to wonder how stable the club really is despite this golden age on the pitch, despite this incredible success they've had.
Yeah, and if fans are going to have a hard time getting to this new stadium, then the match day revenue is going to probably decrease, even with an increased capacity.
Yeah, so my question would be, where the hell are they going to play if they're determined not to play at the Calderon, and if a stadium called Wanda isn't going to be ready till, let's say, November?
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
know.
Who knows? Yeah.
Or if they would play to accommodate, at least 40, 50,000 people.
And then they'd have to pay whoever they're leasing the stadium from, so presumably.
Yeah, the worst case scenario, the thing that happens if they don't pay Slim back is that Slim or Wanda or whoever would take control of the club. All the shares
Right.
would then go to Slim, and then that would open up a Pandora's box of its own making of its own. And
Yeah. And,
yeah.
Carlos Slim owns a ton of Mexican soccer teams. I think he owns like three or four, so yeah,
Yeah.
I'm not really wanting that to happen.
So there's a lot that already has been determined, but there's a whole lot more uncertainty and a whole lot more that has not been determined that should make a lot of people kind of nervous about what's going to happen even this summer. The uncertainty starts this summer with who Atleti need to sell, if anyone. If they can get enough from the Calderon site, if they can pay Slim back, if the revenue generation is good enough, or if it's not, then you wonder who are they going to sell. And under a transfer ban, who are they going to replace these players they're selling with?
Yeah, it's a very tough spot for the club.
None of that other scenario is good. Well, let's stay with the first scenario, where
Yes,
everything is
we,
hunky
yeah.
dory. I'd let you don't get
I
bogged
know.
down by this.
Yeah, if you read into this article too much, you'll start worrying a lot about the future of the club, so we'll just, hope for the best.
Yeah, I recommend you read it anyway and draw your own conclusions. It's on the Independent's website, and yeah, check it out. Let us know what you think on Twitter at JB Barron, at Trappin, TRAUPPIN, at Into the Calderon. You can also let us know on Facebook. Make sure to like us there as well. And yeah, what else you got, Rob? Anything else?
Are we gonna do? Oh, are we gonna do Athletic another day?
Oh, thank you for reminding me. Yes, Rob from Athletic Club UK was supposed to be on this program today. He unfortunately had to back out. He will be appearing on this program tomorrow, Saturday. Rob from Athletic Club UK and myself will offer a full preview of Atleti's trip to Athletic on Saturday's edition of Social Narrow Chat. So keep it right here and be on the lookout for that, dropping before,
Woohoo!
yeah, exactly, before
2 days in a
US time.
row. Oh.
Yeah, for sure. And then we're probably gonna have the post-game pod on Sunday and Monday. We're just
Flooding your
pouring gas on this.
podcast feed.
Yeah. So it's important that you listen to all new and archived episodes of Colchonero Narrow Chat to get caught up with us. And you can do that by subscribing to Colchonero Narrow Chat on iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, and Google Play. iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, and Google Play. That's where you can find all new and archived episodes of Colchonero Narrow Chat. Make sure you leave a rating and a review on iTunes. It's really important. I want to emphasize that. Really helps us out here at the blog and at the podcast. Any feedback you can give us would be really appreciated as we keep on keeping on, keep growing this thing.
Yes,
All right,
indeed.
Rob, anything before we sign off?
Nope, that's it for me.
Wonderful. Well, I want to thank my guest, Rob Walker, for coming on tonight. Really appreciate it.
Glad to be on as usual.
And we'll catch you on the flip side. Adios.
Goodbye.